Okay, recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Mr. Mike Hirschberg on the line. He's the executive director of the Vertical Flight Society there in the nation's capital. Well, actually, you know, in the big metropolis there in Arlington or somewhere in Virginia. And they can be found, Vertical Flight Society can be found on the net at Vertical Flight Society, V as in Victor, T as in Tom, O as in Opera, ellisonlake.org, so vtol.org. Mike, it's great to talk to you once again, and welcome to the remote working environment. That's great, isn't it? Yeah. Well, today I wanted to see if you and I could explore the challenge of combining vertical flight, which is, you know, the traditional helicopter flight, with forward flight that, you know, traditionally the fixed-wing aircraft does. Yeah. And now, my son, Christoph, as you know, is a pretty clever guy, and he's the engineer, and I tried to get him to brief me on it, and he did. But it turns out it's extremely complex. And but I'll say at the outset here that I have the impression, and he sort of agreed, that when you try to combine the two flights, and of course, just for clarification's sake, the vertical flight can go forward, but you know it's at a slower pace. So the idea is to pick up the pace, pick up the speed, and go like an airplane, right, like a fixed wing. So anyway, back to the issue: combining the two requires a lot of complexity and weight. And he was suggesting that you may not even want to bother with that because you're going to lose payload. And but you know we were getting into the nitty gritty. But he, you know, he's sometimes difficult, and he got upset at me. No, he's a wonderful boy.
Well, I'll try to help give you my perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a very challenging subject, and I'll just start by saying, you know, a helicopter generally has a single main rotor. Or you know something like the Chinook has tandem rotors. So if you want to hover for a long time, you need a big rotor. I mean, it's a rotating wing. That's how you generate lots of lift. That's how you can have efficient hover. Conversely, if you're a fixed wing airplane and you want to have a efficient aerodynamic lift and use a minimum amount of power, you need a really long and skinny wing, so like a glider.
Mm-hmm. U-2?
U-2 airplane, sure. A glider has a really long wing because they don't go very fast, but they're very, very efficient. They use a minimum amount of fuel or energy to fly.
Yeah.
So in between, right, is other types of aircraft, and there's been, you know, various attempts since before the helicopter was invented to have something that's both efficient in, something that can take off and land vertically and something that can fly horizontally efficiently. So various things actually for more than 100 years looking at combining propellers or rotors and wings, today... in the 2020s, so 100 years after people first started flying rotary wing aircraft, you really have the helicopter, at least in the commercial world. The helicopter is the only vertical flight aircraft that's operational. In the military world, you know, we've had the Harrier, the Russians had the Soviet Forger.
Okay.
We now have the Joint Strike Fighter, the F-35. The Osprey, and that's it. I mean, those are the only non-helicopter vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that have ever gone into production.
Mike, just to interrupt, you're talking about the V-22 Osprey.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, the V-22 Osprey. Now, you know, there is a commercial aircraft, a small civil tilt rotor which is now the Leonardo AW609. That's going to be in production and operational service here in the next year, probably. Mm. It's been under development since 1996, so it's had a long development period.
Yeah.
So it's hard, and that's something that people really need to recognize. There is some, you know, and this is, you know, we haven't said the word yet, but eVTOL, electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, are trying to come up with a solution that does finally marry the vertical takeoff and landing capabilities of a helicopter with the efficient fixed wing forward flight of a conventional airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the ways they do that is they're not as efficient as an airplane in cruise, and they're not as efficient as a helicopter in vertical flight. It's a it's a compromise. And honestly, most of the eVTOL aircraft today are not actually looking at faster speeds. It's just more efficient and quieter and cheaper and safer and, you know, more economically viable to fly. So it's getting rid of some of the mechanical, it's getting rid of all the mechanical complexity of a helicopter, the turbo, you know, turbo shaft or piston engines, the gearbox, the transmission, the drive shafts, all the couplings to, you know, from the tail rotor. So trying to get rid of a lot of complexity from mechanical systems and replace them with a lot of, I'll say, dumb, cheap electric motors and batteries and wires.
Yeah. Which is a super advantage. But still, Christoph was suggesting, by the way, Christoph Pachauri at PachauriTechnologies.com, if anybody wants to check it out, he was suggesting that when you turn the rotor there, or the, you know, propeller, whatever you want to call it, you're going to be adding a lot of weight and complexity. And he suggested that that may not, you know, anyway, I told you, we're not sure. So, well, no big conclusion. Yeah, but
yeah, so,
what do you think?
So from weight, absolutely. Batteries, compared to the energy in fossil fuel aircraft, fossil fuels, so typically kerosene or even diesel or gasoline, but compared to those, batteries suck. It's like 5% of the energy density, so the weight and the volume, is available in a battery that would be available for burning fossil fuels. So fossil fuels are, you know, 20 to 50 times more energy dense, you know, and lighter in that perspective than
payload and power, of course.
Now the key though is, you know, a helicopter is, you know, there's a joke that helicopters don't actually fly, they just beat the air into submission. So the helicopter rotor is always generating thrust. So when it's going in forward flight, it's still working hard. It's not as, doesn't have to provide as much, doesn't burn fuel as much or use as much energy as when it's hovering or when it's taking off, but it still uses a lot compared to a fixed-wing aircraft. If you have a propeller that's pushing you along, you don't need much energy for, if you've got wings that can provide efficiency. So
the lift is coming from those wings.
And not from the rotor. So the I'll say the hope or really it's the demonstrated capability is that if you have a wing, you can fly efficiently. And even though those batteries are heavy and they don't have much, you know, you don't have much range with that, you can buy back a lot of it with having an efficient wing. And if you have requirements that say, okay, we want to be much quieter than a helicopter, we don't want to make pollution, we want a sustainable, we want an energy efficient, a green solution. If you want something that's going to be able to operate inside cities where people complain about loud noises, if they can't hear it, then they're not going to complain. So currently, helicopters are not welcome in cities. So if you had something that people couldn't really hear over the traffic noise. I was in New York City a week ago, and it was pretty loud.
It is.
So you could see, you know, helicopters flying, but you couldn't hear them because the din of the city. So if you can have something that people don't hear and they don't complain about, then you can have operations that helicopters can't do today. And that's kind of one of the, you know, one of the killer apps, one of the key capabilities that eVTOL promises that it should be able to provide.
Now, if you're moving up vertically, you really don't want any fixed wings there, right? You know, it's a design that's kind of curious, and I think Christoph told me again, I mentioned this before, but Donald Trump was on the commission that was studying it. I guess he was chosen to be on it. And apparently he, you know, and I'm not promoting Donald Trump, but it's just kind of curious that he was there. And he did say that he felt it was, maybe he was interested in buying one. That was it, you know. So
a civil tilt rotor?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so, you know, he figured, well, it's just not going to work. You know, in the V-22, is just this monster of aircraft, And I guess, you know, when it lands or when it takes off, you don't want to be anywhere near, right? I mean, so.
Right, and that's a key point, right?
Yeah.
So that the V-22, it can take off at 50,000 pounds. So that means when it's taking off, that 50,000 pounds of air is coming down, and it's got to go somewhere. So if you have a very large rotor, then it's a bigger area. It's a bigger area of the air that's moving downward, and so it doesn't have to go fast. But when you've got those two prop rotors, which are not as big as a regular helicopter rotor, all that air has to go through those rotors, and it has to go really fast. So it is a problem, and it was designed for military requirements. So, you know, when you say it's a monster, it was designed for all the requirements that the Marines had, and that made it, I'll just say, it made it not suitable for, you know, operations on civil missions.
Sure.
Now, for the civil tilt rotor, you know, they have a different design. It's not as, you know, it's much smaller than the V-22, and it doesn't have some of these issues. And if you look at the electric VTOL aircraft, they're much smaller. Instead of being 50,000 pounds, they're going to be like 5,000 pounds, much less downwash.
Yeah, so acceptable amount of downwash then?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the plan. Right.
And now, you know, again, I guess we need to address this because Christoph emphasizes that you move those rotors, tilting them, and he was suggesting that that's really difficult to do and expensive, and, you know, weight, it's also going to weigh a lot. And he was just, you know, so we were discussing that. In fact, I'm going to have to talk to him again and get him cornered him in his little office up there. But you know, what could you say about that, Mike?
Yeah, so there's a tremendous span of different ideas for electric VTOL. So so we have a website, evtol.news. We have almost 500 different designs that people have come up with, and, you know, probably at least half of them are still in active study or active development. But there's probably three dozen, I'll say now, that are really far along in testing. And there's still an expanse. So there's everything from, basically similar. there's tilting propellers. So, you know, one example is Joby Aviation, who have an air taxi with six tilting propellers, and that is more complex, but it's also higher performance than something that only has, you know, a couple lifting propeller. You know, it has just lifting propellers, or one that has lifting propellers and a wing and a forward propulsing propeller. So there's a spectrum. You have more complex and higher performance, or you can have very uncomplex and very simple and lower performance.
I see. Yeah. Well, it's proving to be a challenge, right? Because you know, since the helicopter's been around, like you said, about 100 years, and we really haven't seen any kind of change in the helicopter since then, right? Pretty much,
right.
Is that correct?
I mean, it's, you know, the design that was, you know, Igor Sikorsky flew in 1939, the single main rotor. Since then, it's something like 95% or something of helicopters are all that single main rotor design. And
that's amazing.
You know, they can do a hell of a lot more than they could in 1939.
Sure.
But they pretty much, I mean, they generally look about the same.
Yeah.
That same general configuration.
That's
much
right.
Bigger and more capable and things like that.
And the same goes for the fixed wing aircraft. Pretty much. I mean, they haven't changed either. I mean, except for the different configurations.
You're right. I mean, if you look at an airliner, if you look at an airliner, since it looks kind of the same as the Connies from the 1930s or the jet airliners, and, you know, certainly fighters and other types. I mean, different types of aircraft have changed. But,
of course.
So the electric VTOL is something that's radically different than anything that's been done before.
Yeah.
And the key benefit, the killer app or the killer application in this case, is that instead of having mechanical linkages, having an engine driving a gearbox, going to a shaft and driving propellers, it's all by wires. So you can have, you can have batteries that power 2 or 1 or 36 propellers, and it's just a matter of wires. So it's a lot less difficult than having,
36 gearboxes.
No question.
For instance.
No question.
So it's really a
yeah.
it's really a revolution in
no,
revolutionary
it's true.
Transformative
yeah.
capability.
And you don't necessarily need batteries to power that electric motor. You could power it with, like we discussed this already, I think, Mike, right? You could power it with ammonia. You could crack the ammonia into hydrogen, whatever, right? There's
right.
lots of options.
Right. In fact, so the most popular ones today are all electric and hybrid electric, where
okay.
you have a you know either a piston engine or a turbine engine that's generating power and electricity,
mm-hmm.
and then taking that electricity and driving the motors.
Okay.
Or sometimes it's the generator that's the hybrid plus a battery, so it's charging the battery or supplementing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're also looking at hydrogen, so that could be hydrogen fuel cells.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a hydrogen, you know, burning hydrogen for power generation. So certainly there are other ways, but We still call them all, the Vertical Flight Society, still call them eVTOL or electric VTOL because it's that transformative capability of wires. It's,
yeah.
it's power by wire because
okay.
then you can put propellers all over the aircraft that you
yeah.
can't do without,
right.
but you can't do with mechanical linkages.
Okay, so that's the critical issue then. We move to electric motors for the propellers. Yeah,
right.
No question.
Exactly,
okay.
yeah. That's what we see as just this,
yeah.
the revolution.
And then you ask, okay, can you really combine forward flight, fixed-wing flight with helicopter or vertical flight? And that again, we're going to be talking about this until we're 78 years old. Yeah, I don't know. If you had to make a prediction right now, if you were, you know, at the casino and you wanted to take a try at it, what would you say, Mike? Tough.
Well,
I'm sorry to ask a question then.
Well, it's... There are several companies. I mentioned Joby. There's Beta.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to remember them all.
Right,
so
right.
Wisk, Archer, Lilium, Volocopter.
Okay.
And they're well along. I mean, most of those companies have been at this for 10 years almost,
okay.
Or some more. And they've got, you know, passenger carrying or large, you know, full scale aircraft that have been flying. Some
okay.
of them, you know, hundreds or thousands, you know, 1,000 flights. So
and they're combining vertical with forward flight then.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
And they're
so,
they're going to have some wings of some kind on the aircraft.
Yeah, all the ones I mentioned except for Volocopter in Germany. They've been flying for 10 years with a multicopter that didn't have any wings, but they,
okay.
in the last few months, have come out with a winged design for a longer range.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's kind of that spectrum. If you have no wings, you have very short limiter range. If you have
yeah.
wings, so what we call a lift plus cruise, if you have takeoff propellers plus wings plus a thrusting propeller, you get
mm-hmm.
better performance.
Mm-hmm.
If you have all tilting propellers plus wings like Joby, you get the best performance. But
okay.
again, more complexity.
Mm-hmm.
But all those companies are really looking in the next 3 to 4 years to have
mm-hmm.
operational aircraft.
Wow. Okay.
So if I were a betting man,
okay,
I would bet a lot
okay.
that within the next, I'll say Joby is planning in 2024 to be operational. Some of the other companies are 2024, 2025 to be operational.
Mm-hmm.
I would bet a large sum that in 2024 there will be some kind of operational aircraft. Now, just designing aircraft is one thing, putting
mm-hmm.
it in production, putting it in operation is another thing, but
yeah.
you really have to look at the financial success. Is it going to be economically
yes.
viable to have hundreds or thousands of aircraft providing air taxi services? Will people be able to make money? Will enough
yeah.
people be able to ride them? Will it be too expensive? So there are a whole host of issues.
And what about that, Mike? I agree. I mean, we talked about that before. I think that's an excellent point. What's the use of some aircraft unless you can make money and
right.
it's efficient and affordable?
Right. Right, absolutely, and that's exactly right. If it's great to design something, but if it's too expensive, right? I mean, if it's
mm-hmm.
if it costs $60 to fly across town, and everyone's like, no, that's too much. I'll take the subway, and it'll take me an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then, or I'll work from home now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be that everybody decides to work from home, and so we don't need air taxis anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Which isn't necessarily disparaging against the design concept.
Mm-hmm.
It was just
mm-hmm.
you know. The world changed.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, so the big question, for, you know, we believe that the technology works. There's a lot of people who think it's all all rubbish.
Right, right.
We believe that designs will work. They'll be approved and certified and go operational. And we think they'll be successful. We think that there is a real lucrative market out there.
Yeah.
But, and maybe they won't make money in the first couple of years. Maybe it'll take a few years. Maybe instead of 2024 or 25, maybe it'll be 2030, and there'll be thousands of these aircraft flying across the country, or maybe thousands in each city. You know, it's interesting. You know, one thing about, Uber and Lyft is, they've been very successful in operations, but, Uber's lost money, I think, pretty much every year.
Yeah.
Right?
They have, yeah.
So...
And why do you think that is?
Why they lost money? Well,
yeah.
I mean, they've been focusing on market share, and they've gotten a lot of investment, and so when you're getting money coming in through investments, then you don't necessarily, and I'm not a business guy, so anybody listening to this, if I say this wrong, I apologize.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, if you're a taxi company, you don't have investors. You're trying to make money day in and day out by serving customers. And Uber and Lyft, were successful in selling rides because they were subsidizing the cost of the ride of the thing. So, Uber loses money on almost every ride they give.
Yeah. Now, is that because the business model assumed, is kind of an interesting question, and I talked to Christoph about this, but the business model may have assumed, and I'm not a business guy either, so we're both covered. But isn't it possible the business model assumed that self-driving vehicles was going to be kind of acceptable and workable and viable, and that this was just not a new app? Clever way of flagging down a taxi, but it was just a whole new way of powering, mobility around a congested city.
Well, I think that certainly, I think driverless cars, self-driving cars, I think are on everybody's roadmap, and it hasn't come as quickly as those companies have expected or hoped.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when they launched, when Uber launched, was it 10 years ago or whatever, that it was their expectation.
Okay.
I mean, when Uber first launched, it was just a black cab service.
Okay.
And Lyft was really the one that came up with the, quote, the ride-sharing or the ride-hailing app. And I think because of that, that disrupted Uber's, business plans. They came out with, Uber X, the personal service. And that's the thing, right? So, and that'll happen with eVTOL as well.
Yeah.
The world will change, whether it's another, COVID, instead of COVID-19, it's COVID-21 or COVID-22 or whatever.
That's right.
And the Delta variant or Lambda.
Yeah.
The world's going to change. We think, again, long range, that eVTOL aircraft and not just an air taxi, but all kinds of markets will technologically be proven and safe and matured.
Yeah.
And they'll find the apps. They'll find the the use cases that are most profitable. And that could be cargo. It could be unmanned.
That's right.
Unpiloted. It could be air taxi services. We really look at, and we call it the eVTOL revolution. And we look at this as just like, kind of sort of the app economy where, or the smartphone, right? I mean, Apple came out with the first iPhone, and it wasn't very good if you look at what it could do then versus, I mean, it wasn't that much better than a BlackBerry at the time.
Sure.
But once you prove the kind of the Apple the iOS, and then Android came out with the competing capabilities, I mean, smartphones are revolutionary. I mean, you can't imagine living out without a smartphone anymore unless you're over the age of 80.
Even
then, right?
Yeah, so, good point, yeah.
I mean, we can't imagine a life without smartphones. And they're so revolutionary. And I used to make fun of it. It's like, why in the world would you want a camera on your phone? Why not have a camera on your toothbrush or your, your ballpoint pen or whatever? Why would you want a camera?
Yeah.
Who would ever think of this? But now... That's it. I have an Android, and it's got a fantastic camera. I have all kinds of digital SLRs and all kinds of cameras.
Sure.
I just bring my cell phone. It's amazing.
Yeah, and so much technology and power that you probably don't use most of it. Is that true?
Well, I use it pretty heavily, but okay. I mean, nobody uses all the capabilities.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no doubt. I mean, I think we have, you know, and I'm not a doubter. I think you're right. I'm confirming that you're right. I'm just wondering, you know, what about the battery and, you know, the power, actual power? I mean, we have a digital revolution, obviously. When I was, I think, you know, I'm 62. You're younger, right?
A little younger.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I spent most of my life without the internet. But, you know, when I was a kid, you know, just to give you a brief little, it's kind of a funny story. I mean, I was 10 years old when 2001 Space Odyssey came to the movie theater, and my mom drove me over to watch it. And, you know, there was this hoopla about, you know, well, we were going to go to the moon, and we did go to the moon. And, you know, everybody was believing at the time that we would have all this wonderful technology and do these things. And, of course, here we are. You know, 50 years later, and well, it's sort of there, but yeah, not really. So my point is that we can't really expect to predict the future, but we do have revolution in information technology, and we can, you know, we can reconfigure these aircraft, the fixed wing and the vertical flight helicopter. We can reconfigure them, but we're still faced with this gravity pull, you know, which is really serious, and we need enough energy. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, we went to the moon, and well, I don't know, Mike. We've gone to the moon, and nothing much happened afterwards. You know?
Well, I mean, right? The world space race. So China is launching people, and you know, Europe and the U.S. and the U.S. has, you know, landed a helicopter on Mars, and it's been flying around quite a bit and doing all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there's plans to take, you know, launch people back to the moon and stuff like that. So maybe it's just a little bit, you know, a few decades later than we had hoped. But you know, our country, other countries, the world has to make these decisions. Do we want to spend that much money, you know, going to the moon, having space stations, having a space shuttle, going to Mars and doing these things? Or are there other things that our nation, our society should invest in? And
like a war in Afghanistan for 20 years.
And, you know, there's all kinds of social issues and social justice. And, you know, people, you know, 600,000 plus people died of COVID, and you know, the scientific world came through. The scientists came up with a lot of different vaccines that now are being distributed in the in the, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds. I don't know if it's a billion yet, but hundreds and hundreds of millions of people, and that's like
amazing.
A person on the moon. Yeah. I mean, it's been tremendous.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no, there's reason for optimism. I agree.
Yeah. And if you looked at the trajectory from the 1960s of where the space race is going, it was reasonable to think that we would have space stations. We did. We had the Skylab in the 1970s.
Yeah.
We have, you know, today we've got the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
We've had incredible robotic exploration of Mars. You know, the plan is to eventually go to the Red Planet with human spaceflight. And that's a decision for our leaders to make those are decisions that they need to make, and balance that with all the other needs of society.
Well, I think you probably know better more than I do about this, but I think the first missions to the moon, Apollo missions, were considered by NASA, senior people at NASA, to be a kind of 50-50 proposition, right?
Yeah.
So those guys were, you're pretty brave, and I, you know, that's my last comment. I mean, if we're going to do great things, we're obviously going to have to take some risk.
Right. And I mean, just to continue along that space analogy, I mean, the Mars helicopter, I mean, I think it just did its ninth flight. It's like going off the charts as far as what they had planned to do with it. They had planned five flights, and I was telling everybody, we had been covering this for several years because, you know, it's an electric helicopter, but I was given a 50-50 odds that the first flight was going to be successful. I mean, basically, you know, all the researchers and people I knew said, man, if we can get off the ground and then land it again safely, I mean, that's going to be...
That's amazing.
I mean, I was getting a 50-50 chance that either it wouldn't take it off at all, or it'd take off and
you know, fall over when trying to land. So,
and that's, so it's been a great success.
It's been off the charts. Yeah,
yeah.
Incredible success.
Well,
and you know, we don't know for eVTOL. We think it's going to be really revolutionary and have this great capability. And like I said, technologically, and be approved for operations.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, is it going to have an impact on society? So 5 years from now, are we going to say, I'm going to catch my air taxi across town because
mm-hmm.
I don't want to sit in traffic for an hour. It's mm-hmm. going to take, you know, 10 minutes and it's going to be cool.
Well, you there?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm thinking that ultimately, and I've discussed this with Christoph, I think he sort of sympathizes, but you know, you can't really do much without power, energy for power. And so if you got a lot of energy, you can do pretty much what you want, brute force, you know. And so if we have expensive energy, we're going to be doing less. If
right.
we have cheap
Absolutely.
Energy, we're going to be doing more.
Right.
And so I'm just hoping that maybe we can find out if we can, you know, figure out if we can use the energy we have right now, hydrocarbon, for example, mm-hmm. liquid hydrocarbons, more efficiently. Or, I don't know, we can talk, that could be the topic of the next discussion.
Yeah,
you know, energy. I mean, we can't really do much without energy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I would say, you know, all electric aircraft, they have no tailpipe emissions, right? But,
yeah.
you know, if you're using coal or burning fossil fuels to generate electricity, then, I mean, it's probably more efficient, maybe,
yeah.
And we have to do the trades. But, you know, the key would be, can we use renewable sources, you know,
right.
wind and
sure.
and
yeah.
solar power to generate electricity to have really clean
mm-hmm.
Power generation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, it's all about using the energy efficiently. But, you know, if you look at your laptop, you know, or your cell phone 10 years ago compared to today, I mean, there are tremendous improvements in batteries. And we're probably at the stage now where, you know, we went from NiCads and you know, all the different types of batteries. Now
yeah.
we have lithium ions or new types of lithium ion generations. You know, people are talking about solid state and lithium sulfur, all kinds of new battery chemistries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there'll be a step change and improvement
okay.
in batteries over the next 5 years.
Okay.
And like I said, it's all about using the energy you have as efficiently as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought of one last thing, and I'll let you go here soon whenever you want to go, Mike, but I remember talking to some Australian IT guy, this is maybe 15, 20 years ago, and he was getting upset about the fact that we were going to use a lot of electricity with our IT, you know, networks around the world, computers buzzing, I mean, all over the place. And I remember thinking, you know, I want to be polite to the guy because I'm not an IT expert, I'm not an engineer, professional one, but I feel like saying, you know, do you know how much computers cost to run? I mean, you know, your typical laptop is probably costing, you know, an average person, you know, high cost electricity, probably $5-6 a year, you know. And I told him, I said, well, do you realize what would happen if we had computers that were like 10 times or 100 times more energy consumptive than what we have?
Right.
We wouldn't be using computers.
Right.
You know,
well,
can you imagine?
Right,
so,
and you look at some of the computers from, you know, 20 years ago, 15
yeah.
years ago, before, you know, Energy Star and stuff like that, and they were terrible, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you'd power them up and power the CRT monitor and,
yeah.
you know, the lights in the house would dim. So
the monitor took most of the energy, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
no, yeah. and it's so we have made tremendous
yes.
improvements. Now, what's
exactly.
interesting, and this is a bit of a tangent, I don't
okay.
know that much about this, but I understand from, like, mining blockchain,
okay.
like Bitcoin,
sure.
I understand it's uses, they have these farms, these
yeah.
Bitcoin or blockchain mining, cyber currency.
Okay.
To generate these
Excuse
things,
me.
And it uses a tremendous amount of energy. And
mm-hmm.
So that's a weird thing where
yeah.
IT is consuming huge amounts and producing huge amounts of pollution.
Yeah.
In comparison.
Yeah, well, they need to run 24/7, and they're very powerful, and I guess they need, you know, they need to do a lot of calculations, and so it's, you can't really do everything, you know, but your average computer, you know, your computer, my computer, I would think that your computer's at your house with your family, of course your kids are maybe grown up and not left, but you know, at the height there when everybody's used a computer, probably probably at the most $30, $40 a year.
You know? Probably.
Yeah. Well, Mike, it's great to talk to you.
Likewise.
I think, you know, we can do another one, talk about power and energy. Whenever you want, I'll send you an email.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the. I feel a little disappointed in that we didn't really get into the nitty gritty engineering, but I'll again. I'm just not smart enough.
Well, we can talk about that next time. We can talk about
okay.
Rotor blade, blade vortex interaction, and all kinds of scientific and technical terms.
All right. Well, great. All right. Talk to you soon, Mike.
All right. Thanks.
Bye bye.